Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening. Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host, Han Tran. Han, how are you this evening?
I am doing fantastic, Jim. How are yourself?
Not too bad. We have to apologize. We're getting really bad connections now. Obviously, we're all working from home, so if we cut out occasionally, we're sorry about that. But obviously, welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 71. We're going to talk about COVID-19 and two of the hotter topics, I guess you want to call it. Two of the things that have been talked a lot about. In the forums, in the discussion areas, and that's negative air pressure and ozone as possible solutions or areas of interest when it comes to dealing with this enemy that we're dealing with. So tonight's show is not a part five because we've already gone through all that stuff. We're finished up with the disinfection of last show, but it's about the topics that are being discussed every day. Han and I hear about constant new research. We hear about constant new information. We hear about constant new apparatuses. And we felt it prudent, didn't we, Han, to be able to have a discussion about this stuff, because it was just, we just want everyone to be careful, not just take the word, don't take Han and I's word for it, don't take the word of any salesman, don't take the word of, Mr. Tom Blogger on the internet who says do this, this, and this, or don't take the word of the first, sophisticated looking webinar that comes from whomever. You got to do your research, because this is a difficult time, isn't it, Han?
Yes, and some of the things that we've been hearing are some things that. To make sure that, just beyond the glossy sheets of their marketing pamphlets and stuff, that it actually performs, it actually be safe. Okay, so we're doing our due diligence to make sure that we turn over every rock and stone and leaves to make sure that the information and the promises live up to its reputation and things like that. So, we take in our own caution, and we suggest we want to share and express our concern, because there isn't a one a silver bullet for anything. So do your own research. Don't be complacent. And if it sounds too good, chances are it's too good to be true. Okay, so that's that, Jim.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, we're learning more and more every day. And obviously the scientists and the experts out there are doing the same. And, our job is, and what we have dedicated ourselves in this particular time, is to understand that and kind of delve through it, digest it, create a really thorough understanding, and then help to basically bring that information out and present it to you so that you can have an education as well that's unbiased, unjaded. I mean, we don't sell anything. Han and I, our company, we don't make anything. we provide a service based upon consultation. So we're not tied to a particular product or a manufacturer or a system to be able to, you know, generate our income. That's not what it comes from. Ours is purely fact-finding. We want the truth, and we want the right truth, because just like anything, in straight talk and the way our philosophy is as a company, we want to make sure you have all the information when you make a decision on what you want to do. What kind of scares us, and Han and I, we've had tons of discussions about this and over the last weeks and even today a lot, is that you know, you get a doctor who is out maybe looking at a webinar from some manufacturer of some particular product, and you know, it looks and presents really well, but it's the exact opposite of what you should be doing. But unfortunately, those kind of things happen, and that really does scare us. So that's why we're here. We want to talk about these two subjects. I can guarantee you we'll probably spend more than a whole hour because there's so much about it. But Han, let's start out with negative air pressure. There's been a major uptick in the discussion on Dentaltown about this, hasn't there?
Yes, there have. I think in the last, probably about the last 2.5 weeks, the topic of negative pressure had become almost like, you know, a dinner table conversation. Whether it wanted or not, for some reason, it seems like everybody talking about installing them, putting them in, whatever that means, okay? This is a conversation that, again, like Jim said, we don't have any financial interest. Our incentive and motive is to go and dig up the facts and just lay it on the table. You take it or you leave it, but you do your own research. If it's of value, grab onto it and use it. If not, move along. But negative pressure has its place. We're not dismissing it. We're not encouraging it. If it is a technology or an application that's wanted, it needs to be looked at systematically, comprehensively, because it affects everything you do. Okay, it's not a Band-Aid. First of all, the question that I have to ask, because this is straight talk, is it mandated, or is it just simply everybody talking about it, therefore it got to be something that you got to do? Okay, that's the first answer.
Yeah, it almost takes on a life of its own, Han, and that's the big fear, that this thing takes on a life of its own, and it everybody starts talking about it, and because of that, that intensity of people talking about it, the inadvertent decision is made that this must be the right stuff to do because everybody's talking about it. Now, you and I had a major discussion later on this morning, and it'd be great if you could share that with our listeners, is the whole discussion with, at least a discussion about the governmental agencies like the EPA and the FDA when it comes to negative pressure. Isn't there a new mandate that just came out or some kind of thing that came out? Or is that OSHA?
Actually,
I'm sorry, that was OSHA.
It was OSHA. It was OSHA. Okay. A county reached out to us and asked us if we're familiar with and what, you know, what's our thought about negative air pressure. You know, both Jim and I have experience in dealing with facility with negative air pressure rooms. So it's usually applied to a specific space within the building that have special need where the air pressure within that room is lower than the surrounding rooms. So the air within that room doesn't escape into, out of that room to adjacent space. So anyway, because I've heard so much about negative air pressure, and my first thing is that we do, because building codes and ADA requirements and all that stuff is part of the mandated requirement. If you want your building to be approved, you got to be in compliance, and OSHA is one of those regulatory institution that you have to be in compliance to. So anyway, a document that was passed along to us is called the Guidance on Preparing Workplaces for COVID-19. And so it's, it was put out by OSHA, dated March of 2020. So it's very new, okay? And the very first thing we looked, it's like a 30-plus pages of printing. And so we go to it page by page and see, first things that we want to know is it mandated? Or is this, the first clue is a guidance. Well, guidance means recommendation, okay? It holds no, let me just read you the very first sentence after the cover page. It says, this guidance is not a standard or regulation, and it creates no new legal obligations. That says it all. It has no requirement. Okay. So now the discussion is it a good thing to have negative pressure rooms? If it's not required, but is it a good thing to have? Well, it depends on what you do. It depends what that room is used for. Okay. And let me see, right offhand, if you don't, it's a room that you don't do any clinical procedure and stuff in, that right offhand, I think they could use negative pressure. The restroom is one. You want nothing escape out of that room into the adjacent space. Okay. The guideline from OSHA didn't say anything about you have to or require to have a negative pressure room. So what do we do from here? What is it all about? What is the chatter? What's all the excitement? And why? So we can start on that conversation, Jim. So what does it mean to have a negative air pressure room? You sure?
Yeah, let's talk about the reason why people are especially, doctors and are looking at this is because, they're scared. They want to do the best for their patients. They want to do the best for their staff. And when everybody's ready to reopen, which hopefully will happen sooner than later, that, they have to be in a position to be able to say, hey, my facility is clean. You can come here and feel safe. You can come here and get your procedure, your dental procedures done and not walk out with a deadly disease. That's a big road to hoe when you're talking about dealing with an enemy like the coronavirus, because obviously it's in the water vapor, it's in the water particles that are in the mouth, and that's how it's transmitted. So you're looking at what used the terminology, the belly of the beast here. I mean, you're looking at this invisible enemy, and you're inches away from it, and when you light up that piece of apparatus that you have in somebody's mouth, that stuff goes everywhere. We know that. You know that. You'd be surprised, the research we've been doing, just how far it does go and how far it spreads in all directions and how long it hangs there. and effectively becomes a lethal web that can infect anyone and everyone that walks through that area and or it gets circulated into the system, your HVAC system. So, you know, everybody's scared. And so they're trying to find out, okay, what's the best way to solve this problem? And so that's where the life of this negative air pressure kind of comes from, at least in my opinion. Now, that you asked the question of what really is negative air pressure? So to get for everybody to get a better understanding, and Han, you gave the perfect example. Most people don't know it, but if you have a quality engineer who is working on your particular project, and when they're designed, they design things like restrooms to have negative air pressure. I bet you didn't know that negative air pressure is already being used in your facility, and more than likely your facility has that, because negative air pressure and exhaust go hand in hand. Okay, that's how you create the mechanism of negative air pressure, is by exhausting. So every room that you have an exhaust fan in is more than likely a negative air pressure space. Now, Han, you also mentioned, and appropriately so, that negative air pressure is typically reserved for small or compartmentalized spaces within a larger facility. Okay. Think of it as two bottles of water that are, you know, attached to each other, that you've taped them together, and only like an hourglass, and only one bottle of water at the bottom of it is full of water. The other bottle is empty. If you tip that thing over, water from the full bottle is going to run into the other bottle. Well, that's exactly, think of air as the water. So what happens is you suck out the air within, let's use the restroom scenario. You're sucking the air out of the restroom with an exhaust fan. Okay. That creates a negative pressure within that room. Most restrooms have doors, so that every time you open the door, the surrounding areas, the hallways, the office, wherever you're at, those surrounding areas have a higher pressure. And that air that's in those higher pressure areas rushes through that open door and goes into that restroom. Okay. And then when the door is closed and the exhaust fan is on, the room gets depressurized again, and the cycle continues itself. So what happens in the desire for that is, just like anything else, you don't want the smells and the odors that come from the restroom to get out. You want them exhausted out of your building. Okay. Well, a negative air pressure room, or an isolation room, if you're looking at, for example, a hospital, you want to do the exact same thing. Let's say you have a hospital room, an isolation ward, could be several rooms, could be a small room, but usually it's a smaller space. You want everything in that space, from an air molecule standpoint, to always stay in that space or be exhausted out of it. You don't want any of that to go into the adjacent spaces. So you do the exact same thing. You crank up the exhaust in that room or that space. Because you're isolating it with doors and solid areas so that you don't have communication with the surrounding spaces. Obviously, you have to go in and out of the space. So every time you go in and out of that space, air rushes in from the outside corridor, hallways, adjacent space, whatever it is. The theory is that that air is clean and that the dirty air, or in this case, infected air, is then exhausted out. So it's a continuous motion. The air is constantly being exhausted out. And by the way, this exhaust fan in an isolation room or a negative air room runs all the time. It doesn't have an on-off kind of switch. It constantly should run all the time if you want to have constant negative air pressure. Now, in a bathroom, you're not in there all the time, and so it only runs while you're in the room. If you have your system done properly, the exhaust fan comes on the minute the light comes on within that room. And a lot of times you have a no touch anyways, and you walk in, a motion sensor turns on your light, turns on your exhaust fan, it starts the process of the negative air pressure and it's exhausting out. In an isolation room, you have the exhaust fan all the time. Air is coming in from the hallways and the corridors and everything around it. Every time you open the door, all the pathogen or the germs or whatever that's in that isolation room are constantly being exhausted. Now, the funky thing about an isolation room, which is actually interesting but also kind of scary, and I learned that today in a discussion with our engineer, is that exhaust sometimes does not go outside. Sometimes that exhaust is filtered and treated, and then it gets recirculated back into the isolation room at a percentage. And there's a whole scientific discussion that the engineers go around and deal with when it comes to the amount of percentage of air that gets circulated back in as opposed to the amount of fresh air that's brought into the system. So you've got a complicated formula that it's actually beyond me, and I never was good at that kind of stuff, but that's why we hire expert engineers who know what they're doing, don't we, Han?
Yeah, we have, sometimes we're not the smartest guy in the room.
But we're smart enough to get the smartest guy in the room.
Well, sometimes being the smartest person is the one that go, I need help, okay? And you get the proper help who have more expertise in the area, so that way, one is they save you from yourself, okay?
Right, and they save you from others who don't really know what they're talking about.
Yep. So interrupt for a second here. The clean, or should I say the negative pressure room that are often discussed when it comes to OSHA and hospitals, so it usually referred to hospital facilities. Okay?
Right. Right.
I've learned a few new acronyms, It's AIIR. And I go, what the heck is that? And it's airborne infectious isolation rooms. And because naturally I get curious, if you have a room that's designed for infectious isolation, how do you get the patient there without infecting the rest of the building? All right, we can save that little conversation as we go, as we get further into the program.
Or that might be a totally different subject if we can even get to that part of it. But, the issue is, and Han, you hit an interesting aspect when you talked about airborne, okay? Negative air pressure rooms only affect the airborne pathogen. If the virus or the bacteria or whatever you're trying to protect yourself and your patient from has landed on the surface, negative pressure will do absolutely nothing about it. Because there's not enough negative pressure to be able to suck it off the surface. It's on that surface, and that surface is contaminated. So we're only talking about one aspect of one component in a multiple component solution for, let's say, an operatory. So if we take it to an operatory model, and you're saying, okay, let's depressurize the operatories, put doors on them, put exhaust fans in them, and exhaust all the air. Let's use the theory. Let's exhaust all the air in that space constantly to the outside and constantly supply it with the surrounding cleaner air from, you know, within the space or and combination of clean outside air. You've only affected one component, and that's the airborne portion. You had no effect whatsoever on that virus or pathogen that has got onto a surface. So
exactly.
I guess to bring that into a perspective, Han, you used it today already, I think. There's no one silver bullet. I guess we can say comfortably that negative air pressure rooms are not the silver bullet that can slay this dragon. Or I guess you use silver bullets
on
werewolves.
That.
Yeah, on werewolves. Okay, it can't slay this werewolf because if it's on the surface, you got another whole issue you got to deal with, and you got to deal with it in a different way from the negative air pressure. Now, in theory, if it were to minimize what could get onto the surface, is it a good thing? In theory,
yes.
In theory, yes. if this airborne material, aerosol as we call it, right?
Right.
If it is captured or sucked out of the room fast enough that a small percentage gets onto the surface as compared to it not being in place, and then a large percentage gets, you know, onto the surfaces, you have a smaller dragon or werewolf to deal with. You have something smaller, an enemy that you can maybe deal with in other ways that's less disastrous. Sure, in theory. Now, but the question is, what do you have to do to create a negative air pressure room, and what are the ramifications? And they're pretty big, aren't they, Han? The ramifications of a negative pressure room.
Yeah, I think, Jim, and I mean, if you, if I have to answer the question of why negative pressure room, and the only answer I can give you is that containment of, of infective air. That's it.
Right. But it's only one method.
Okay.
There's a whole bunch of other methods.
Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for, of course you can, you can improve the indoor air quality of that room greatly by increasing the number of air exchange. But in terms of infection control, that's a different story. And that's what we're talking about. I mean, the whole purpose of this conversation about the, COVID-19 is how do you manage it? How do you control it? How do you kill it? And so far we haven't seen negative pressure room to be the solution. It is a part of the solution.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay. It's one way to do, one way to skin that cat, but not a complete skin job. So, still, I'm back to the same question. Is that mandated?
Right. It really isn't mandated. And that's an important thing because the OSHA folks know that it's only one of many possible ways to solve this issue. I guess one of the biggest analogies is you remember way back when, Han, you and I are old enough to remember station wagons that used to have the old wood look panels on them, All right.
The Woody.
Now, yeah. Why did everybody have those? Because it was the in thing to do, right? Back then. It wasn't because
no,
it looked good.
Not.
It,
no,
it wasn't
it,
because it looked good.
Be...
It was because everybody had one.
No.
You know.
My family have 10 kids. We needed it. This is before the SUV.
Right, right. Exactly. And it very quickly got replaced by something that looked a whole lot better. Well, that's the same. You know, I kind of use that analogy when you're looking at, you know, negative air pressure. You know, it's like you don't want to be the guy that says, well, I got a negative air pressure operatory. Why? Well, because everybody else has one. No. You want to say, well, the reason why is because my solves my problem if it in fact does. So, yeah, the whole issue of the negative air pressure room. Now let's. I want to talk just a little bit about it because we spent almost a half of our show already on this thing. But the ramifications of having one, the real ramifications. You will have a substantially increased utility bill. In excess of, we were told today by our engineer, didn't he say 2 to 3 times larger, Hon?
Yes.
Okay.
And we're talking about one room.
One room. Okay, one room. And it was a real scenario because we were talking about Dr. Hunsinger's project, his building, and his addition. So to take that little addition, we're talking, you know, he would be looking at 2 to 3 times larger utility bill. So let's expand that a little bit to say, I'm going to have negative air pressure in all of my operatories. So I'm going to turn every one of them into an isolation room. I'm going to put doors on every one of them if there aren't one. I'm going to exhaust all the air out of that room at a higher rate than everything else around it. And even if I put a percentage of that air back through the system and have an effective way of filtering it and treating it before I put it back in so that you're not just circulating pathogens. And I put that in, he would be looking at, or you would be looking at, a utility bill that's 2 to 3 times larger than what it is. So you know what your utility bill is. Do you want to deal with the utility bill 3 times larger every month? That's a big pill to swallow. I can guarantee you it's large because utilities and dental offices are very large. They always are. And for that to be 2 to 3 times larger, there are other systems and other ways to solve this and not having to go to that extent. Now, there is a system that our engineer showed us and talked to us about that utilizes the negative air pressure, and it creates a filtration component. The exhaust fan becomes a super filtration unit, and it incorporates other stuff. It incorporates that HEPA filter that we talked about. It incorporates potentially the UV light that we talked about, and it filters the pathogen, kills the pathogen, and then ducts it into your HVAC system and brings it back into the space at a metered amount so that you can still maintain that negative pressure, but you have you can do it a little more economically from your utility bills. Because if you take all your air out of your space and throw it outside, you've got to replace it with newly conditioned air. And that has to come from outside fresh air that's clean. And you have to heat or cool it and turn it around and put it back into your room. So it's easier to cool or heat air that's, you know, within 20 degrees of the room temperature versus being from outside air where it's really, really hot or really, really cold, depending on the year or time of year. You could be looking and have a delta of, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 degrees to change that air to that temperature. That's where you get that 2 to 3 times more for energy standpoint. So it's a complicated thing. And again, we're getting into into the weeds, as Hans and I talk about a lot. We're getting into the technical data, but that's where the detail is.
Yeah, I mean, I've read a number of discussion about negative air pressure, and you know, people say, I did my office, and I did, you know, 4 or 5 treatment room, and it cost me $85,000, and so on and so on. I have not run into a dentist that like to cut the bottom of their pocket out so that their money can fall out just for kicks. If it doesn't make sense, why?
It's going to be expensive, not just to install. It's going to be expensive on a day-to-day operations. And that's what will eat you alive. That's what will kill you. Because it'd be great if it went in by itself. All right, it cost you X. You bit the bullet. All right, we're going to do it. But this keeps biting at you. Every month, it keeps hitting your bottom line.
Jim, it's almost like having a high-wage employee that never show up to participate in the production of the business.
Yeah, to make any money to be able to offset what they're being paid. Yes, exactly. So from a negative air pressure, is it bad? I don't think so. I don't think it's bad.
No.
Is it the most effective and best possible solution for COVID-19 and pathogen control? And I'd have to say, I don't see it. We don't see that it is. We don't see that it's a solution, definitely not one by itself. And then you're going to have to really, really, really tell us why you need to have that. And it has to be more than, I just want to get a safe room for my patient and my staff. Because there's a whole lot of other ways we can do that.
And no, we won't accept the answer that it makes me feel good.
That's an awful expensive feel good.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the
potential expense of putting in a negative pressure room or space within your existing building, you can implement other more productive, more effective technologies to handle and manage the infectious issues related to COVID-19 and others.
And any other viruses or bacteria, because we were talking today in one of our other presentations that this pathogen is unbelievably small. I mean, it's called the invisible enemy for a reason. It literally is invisible. It is so small. I mean, it's a small size. It's 0.04 microns. You can't even just imagine how small that is. I can't give you an item to relate to how just small it is, but it is really small. So to be able to deal with and fight this invisible enemy, you have to do the right thing. So go back to our other podcasts, the last 4 in the series, and you'll get an overview of all the potential things that can be done to be able to deal with and slay this particular enemy. Now let's, in the next, 20 minutes we have to finish up the show, let's jump into the whole discussion about ozone.
Let me, Jim, do this before we jump into the ozone discussion, okay?
Okay.
If we have our listener out there, listen, this is a program that we put together. It's called Straight Talk because we want to talk straight about everything, okay? And we would encourage you to reach out. Don't be shy. Reach out and ask a question because, again, part of our mantra is, the only dumb question is a question that you never ask. Okay? So our number to reach us and ask your question, if we don't have the answer, I'm telling you, we will find out for you and all of us going to learn. The number to reach us is 657 303-1442. And you can tell us that your name is Bob, and it's fine with us. It don't have to be your real name. Okay? So, Jim, let's move on to the next one.
Unless your real name is Bob, then give us some other name.
There you go. Okay.
Or, you know, if you're uncomfortable calling in, send us an email. Go to our website.
Yep.
Give us a call. We're here. That's what we want to do. You know, because this is important. This is important stuff. Now, ozone. Now, what the heck is ozone? And, you know, there's been some discussions, some thoughts. We've talked with many suppliers. We've talked with people who say that this is the best thing in the world. We've talked with scientists who deal in microbiology and this little germ stuff and the whole aspect of ozone. Now, let's start back with the beginning of what actually ozone is. Now, you know, we're talking with dentists here. You guys should know what it is because you're basically scientists. You have a scientific background. You've went through training scientifically to analyze things in relationship to dentistry. Well, ozone is used in a lot of things. You probably or may very well be using ozone right now to clean your water. But like Bill said today, he said, I've been using it for 15 years in my system. Haven't had a lick of problem with it. Ozone is an excellent disinfectant system for things like water and also for things like surfaces. Now, you probably have not been using it for surfaces, but it can be used for surfaces. And it's like, well, heck, you just said a few seconds ago that negative air pressure is terrible for dealing with surface disinfection. Let's use ozone. Well, don't get ahead of us, right, Hon? Don't get ahead of us.
That's right.
The ozone molecularly gets in and destroys the cell wall of the germ and the pathogen, and so it can't reproduce, just like a whole lot of other systems like UV and soap, for example. Alcohol, bleach, all those other cleaning agents do the same thing. Now, the ozone, the interesting thing, and this is coming from my sister who is a microbiologist and a scientist and deals with this kind of stuff in her industry, which happens to be cosmetics, which, as you well know, if you don't, cosmetics have to be unbelievably clean. They can't have any at all infectious material or bacteria or germs or viruses or pathogens in them. First of all, it's the world's biggest liability if somebody gets sick from using their product. Also, it's a safety factor, and it's mandated by all those three-letter agencies, which, you know, as long as are in the length of list of them. So the ozone is wonderful when it comes to killing pathogens within water. And the real reason behind that is it is not does not require you to change the temperature of that water. You can disinfect water or a liquid other than water without changing its temperature just by interjecting ozone into the system. And then you have to scrub the ozone out before you let the product leave the or get bottled and that kind of stuff. So it goes in and then goes out, and it's done in a methodical method. For that reason. Now, when it comes to disinfecting surfaces, you can do the same thing, but it's the same process. Ozone goes in, it disinfects the surface, and then it's taken out. and captured and dealt with. And what we're talking about is the inside of piping, the inside of particular apparatuses, and that kind of stuff, where it can be totally maintained and isolated. It's not left loose to flood a space. It's not meant for occupied spaces, because ozone, from our research and our understanding and our discussions with the specialists, ozone is not good for you and I. It's terrible for our bronchial system, our respiratory system. There's a lot of health hazards around it. And I think, doesn't the EPA, OSHA, and all those other three-letter agencies have maximum limits on how much you can be exposed to ozone before it's considered unsafe?
Yes, they do. And in fact, of our research and reading, none of those agencies actually endorses, recommend. Actually, they basically say use with caution because it is harmful to human health.
Right. So those recommendations are pretty small. They're small parts per million of, you know, air particles and that kind of stuff. So they're very small amounts. And it's kind of like saying, well, you can be exposed to something that's poisonous, or you can be exposed to something like lead, those kind of things, which are known to be detrimental to you and I, in a very small amount, and you'll be okay. Well, the same thing is with ozone. Ozone, you could be exposed to it in a small amount, and you'll be okay. But it's a matter of the jury's not out, is still out, I'm sorry, in regards to the extended exposure, okay, to us. Right now, those three-letter agencies are saying not too much. So, you know, to use ozone as a surface cleaning agent to disinfect in an operatory or in your building completely is kind of a scary scenario, wouldn't you say, Han?
Yeah, we had manufactured that say that their equipment is safe for to use in occupied space. We have not run into any literature, any study, any research that we are comfortable with in saying, yep, we can do that. It is a good disinfectant that leaves no residue. So it served a very good purpose. The application is where it's important, okay? Because I have to call you, you're responsible for the safety of all the occupants in your building, in your practice, including yourself, your staff, the public, and all that. We just don't feel that it is a method and an agent that are safe to be used in the building when it's occupied. Definitely we go against that. Can it be used in application after hours for disinfectant? It's a candidate that we...
Possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I answer your question, Jim?
It's possible that it could be used after hours, but are there better solutions? We think so. Because just like anything, when you're using ozone within an enclosed environment, you have to get rid of it, okay? It's not like, well, just open the window and let it go outside. Or it's not like, well, just turn on the exhaust fan and exhaust it all out of here. Well, depending on what your system is, your exhaust fan may go right back into your system if you're utilizing the return air filtration system, let's say you had a negative air room that you're cleaning with ozone, you'll never get rid of it. It's always going to be in there. So, you know, you can't just say, well, all right, we'll go clean the surfaces within the space with ozone and move forward from there. And the biggest unknown for us is the long-term exposure and the scientific data behind that. Because if you're putting ozone in, even at a very small parts per million, to kill pathogens that are in the space, either on the surface or in the air, how long does it have to continue to do that, and at what percentage does it kill? Now, what we have found, and we understand, that to get to a 99% level of kill rate of a pathogen on a surface, you have to use four times the amount that you would if you wanted to only get 90%. So we've had that discussion already in our past podcast dealing with the issue of 99% is still not good enough when it comes to viruses and pathogens. You need to be at 99.9997 to feel comfortable enough that you have a clean, sterile facility that is not going to be infectious to someone who comes into it. So if you've got to go four times more just to get to 99, I can only imagine what you have to get to 99.9997. So the practicality, the science, the logic behind it doesn't work for me. We may be totally wrong. I don't think we are. And we'd love if someone out there has better data and information to be able to share with us. Feel free. Give it to us. We'd love to see it. And I'll easily eat crow and, you know, on the airwaves say we were wrong. But I don't think we are.
Yeah, neither Jim or I are Fonzie, okay? And I think we're both up in Missouri. So show us. All right?
Yeah, I've been through Missouri, so you can say that. Yeah, we've been yeah. through Missouri, so show us.
Okay, and so here is a statement that was sent to us in terms of what the FDA accepted requirement. Okay, it's a ozone output of indoor medical devices to be no more than 0.05 parts per million. That is minuscule.
Very
small. Okay.
Really small.
For OSHA, it requires that worker cannot be exposed to an average concentration of more than 0.1 parts per million for 8 hours. And then there's National Institute of Occupational Safety and Health. The recommended upper limit is 0.1 parts per million, not to exceed at any time. And then the EPA, ozone is maximum 8 hour average indoor concentration of 0.08 parts per minute. This is, you know, we're not scientists.
That's just
very small. The thing is, one of the things that have been flagged to us when we do our research is ozone is very difficult to manage indoor in the air. Okay.
Yeah, to be able to control it in the air is terrible.
Good. Okay, so that for us is a major caution. Even if the claim from the manufacturer is that it's a, you know, one, you know, it's an item that can do wonderful things for us, we have not been convinced. So, you know, for us, it's not a technology that we would be comfortably say, let's put that into your facility.
No. When there are other systems and other methodologies and other technologies that do in fact work and work very, very well and are safe, they're safe and provide for a excellent level of kill and excellent level of cleanliness and disinfection, I'm sorry, within your facility. So I guess in the last minute or two, we want to also let everyone know that we're going to be doing our video presentation with Dr. Tom.
Dr. Tom Oren.
Yes, exactly, Dr. Tom Oren. Here very shortly. We don't have an exact time of when it will be on the website, but look for it. It'll be on his. It'll be on ours. It'll be a really cool presentation that'll have a lot of information in it in regards to what to do, how to deal with this, and those kind of things. And it'll be visual, unlike just listening to Han and I's voice. You'll actually be able to see some visual images because it is a video presentation. So we're excited about that, and I think it's going to be very informative. And Han, didn't you use the word game changer almost?
yes, I did. Yeah. Because there's, you know, think about this on a larger, you know, sense. You know, this massive world that we lived in, everything humming along, everybody's happy or as happy as they can be and all that good stuff. Suddenly, something smaller than a speck of dust flew in, okay, and changed the game drastically. Yeah, so yep. I think it's an appropriate thing to say it's a game changer. Yep. You know,
it's never going to be the same. It's never going to be
right.
The same. We're, the old ways are done. It's never going to go back to that now. I don't see it. Because if they eradicate COVID-19, guess what? There's going to be something the next year. Or there's going to be something the next year after that. This will happen again. And hopefully we're all prepared for it in a better way, because the systems and methodologies and the strategic things that we're talking about work for this virus and a lot of other viruses because they're viruses. All right. So it's, you know, it's possible that we could be implementing stuff today that will save you from having to shut down tomorrow when the next enemy, the invisible enemy, shows its ugly face. Just something to think about.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not all about gloom and doom, but I think it's, you know, you take the necessary precaution. You know, of course, it's everything we talk about have a layer of expense, but if you look at it more of an investment into your health, then I think it's worth it. You know, you're in a dental facility. You are exposed to so much. We don't need to tell you. You already know that. Okay, it's almost a cesspool of germs, and everything that you can do to protect yourself, your staff, your patient, your family, because all this, I mean, 0.0, Jim, I think it's 0.06. The naked eye can't see it, but it doesn't take much for it to attach itself and you can take it home to your family. So if you can eliminate it, kill it off, or kill a whole bunch of it off, with the, you know, with the available technologies and strategies, and then you are, you know, that you're just that much safer. And this is, you know, this is about all about safety. Okay, control it, kill it, maintain it, however you want, whatever you want to call it, but it's about your safety.
And just to give someone a little realistic, I mean, because, you know, we're talking with dentists and doctors, obviously. So you guys have looked in microscopes before, and you have an idea of just how big a red blood cell is. That's 7 microns. Average red blood cell is 7 microns. This thing is as small as 0.06 microns. Big difference. Pretty dinky. Okay.
We've blown
through our hour, like always, and hopefully we've covered our subject at least thoroughly enough that you understand that this is a difficult topic. We wanted to make sure that you had the right information so that you can make educated decisions. Feel free to call Han or I, get a hold of us, get us an email, send us I don't care how you get a hold of us, right? If you want to talk with us, we're here to help. We can do an evaluation of your facility. We can do that. We do that virtually so that no one has to actually physically, you know, be within 6 feet of each other, and at least help you out, maybe get you pointed in the right direction to be ready to open up. If you know, everything works well, they're talking about here in Ohio beginning to open up the medical facilities come May 1. Well, are you ready? Because if you don't, you know, you should be. Because we got a lot of work to do. I'm sure your patient load is backed up. All those things that haven't happened, all the hygiene appointments, all the crown work that needed to be done, all the stuff that's out there that needed to be done, which didn't get done because of the shutdown. So with that, thank you. And Han, I'll let everybody know the last words.
All right. There is things that you can do. At least little things. You're not going to go and tear down your building and make any major changes. It had to be incrementally taken care of. But anyway, plug into our podcast and look at the literature and the program that we have and glean what you can out of it. Take a step in the right direction to help yourself out. Well, I appreciate you spending the hour this evening with us. We had a great time. Until next time, have a good evening. Stay safe.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.